Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
It is indeed. Are you here with us, Alan?
I hope so.
That sounds so unsure. You are indeed. How are you going?
I'm doing okay.
Are you also feeling it?
It's level 3. Yeah, I'm feeling it. Yes, again, what is it? But it'll be good to get back to work sometime. We'll see what happens in level 2, whether the universities go back into level 2 or not. I don't know yet.
Is that something that's up to, I mean, you know, if the government say, yes, universities can return at level 2, do you think, you know, AUT will go back or will they see out the semester online?
I really don't know. I think, I actually don't know what the story is there, but I was listening to your news article about Massey and about the kids and online teaching, online learning, and all of that stuff. And it's just no substitute for the real thing. It really isn't. I'm finding it very, very difficult to teach classes through a computer, and I can feel the kids are getting a bit frustrated about the whole thing. And I'm sure they'd much rather be in a lecture theatre than watching me on a laptop. So yeah.
And I suppose I'm not sure if the world has done this yet, where we have a kind of worldwide move to online learning, but surely there would be, you know, the opportunity now to research this and actually get some substantial data on whether this is working or not.
Yes, there would. Yes, indeed there would. And that would be a very, very interesting exercise. I'd love to see what the students think of this and whether they think it's going to be a viable long-term thing. You might glean from my demeanour there that I don't think it is, but we'll see.
We'll see. Okay, well, let's move, speaking of science, into our first topic, which is a controversial one, I suppose, and we're going to look to you for perhaps some consensus around this.
Oh, God, no, not me. all about face masks. So obviously, 6 weeks ago or however long, or 2 months or whatever long ago, you know, we never gave face masks a thought, really. It's the sort of thing that you might wear when you're doing DIY and you're busy sanding jib or something like that. But now, you know, they're very, very important things. And the question is, do face masks help us or hinder us or whatever? And you might think without thinking about things that surely face masks have to be a good thing in stopping the COVID-19 virus. And so therefore there was a group that was put together by the Royal Society in the UK, the Royal Society, and they were asked to look at whether wearing face masks was a good thing in stopping the whole COVID-19 epidemic. And so they came to the conclusion, and I quote, "Our analysis suggests that their use could reduce onward transmission by asymptomatic and pre-symptomatic wearers if widely used in situations where physical distancing is not possible or predictable, contrasting to the standard use of masks for the protection of wearers. If correctly used on this basis, face masks, including homemade cloth masks, can contribute to reducing viral transmission." And so basically they came out very strongly in favour of wearing face masks, although, as they say, normally you see people wearing face masks to protect themselves. Whereas what they're saying is that the use of face masks is in fact not to protect the wearer, but to protect everybody else. So you've got a lot of people who are asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic, but who are still infectious or potentially infectious. And so the wearing of face masks by those individuals is obviously going to protect other people.
Right.
Okay. Now, here comes the problem, because they put out this finding, and then they were immediately jumped on by a whole lot of scientists in the UK. And so these scientists were saying, well, hang on a minute, where have you got your data from? Because they haven't got their data from this current epidemic. They're essentially relying on going to the literature, having a look at what people have done in the past about this particular question. And in fact, what they found was that in all of the literature, there's really only two studies about using face masks to slow transmission of viruses, et cetera, et cetera. And so these academics then came along and said, well, you know, this is just your opinion. You've only got two studies. One of them is rubbish. The other one's not quite so crash on as well. And they then started saying, well, hang on, what can happen with face masks is that then people wearing face masks can then get a false sense of security through the wearing of face masks, and they'll think that, you know, they're oblivious to everything. And obviously the whole thing with face masks is, number one, they've got to be the correct type of face masks to be really, really effective. And so therefore, everybody seems to be after these N95 face masks. And so N95 face masks fit very, very snugly around the nose and the mouth. And the 95 refers to the fact that they block 95% of test particles. And these test particles are 0.3 microns in size or in diameter. Okay, so 0.3 microns, to give you some idea, a human hair is around about sort of 50-odd microns, something like that. Right. So that's sort of the width of a human hair. So we're talking really, really, really small particles. And so the question then is still out there. You know, some of the academics are saying, no, this just gives a false sense of security and it doesn't do anything at all. It may well do things. They don't know. But what they do need is study on these, you know, and I'm sure that people are doing study on this sort of stuff now because it's going to be very, very important, obviously, in the future. But at the moment, what is in the literature is very, very little. And even the people who are saying that, yeah, the face masks might, you know, just give a false sense of security, they're still saying that you basically, one of the ways that the virus is thought to be spreading is through droplets, okay? And droplets have a size of around about 20 microns or bigger, okay? So these are quite large particles compared to these N95 masks.
Yeah.
And the other way is aerosols, and they are less than about 5 microns. And the droplet particles, they can only travel a limited distance in air before they're affected by gravity. And that's why we've got this sort of 2 meter distancing rule. Whereas aerosols, they're not affected by gravity so much, and so they can therefore travel much faster. And it's not really known whether the main mode of transmission is either droplets or aerosols. And again, people are still working on that. But having said all that...
Yes, what's your verdict?
Well, you know, this is sometimes the problem with science, is that science can't provide the nice sort of cozy answers that you like. It seems to me, just common sense, that putting something over your nose and mouth is surely going to protect either you or the rest of the population, depending on whether you're a carrier or not. So, you know, I've got to admit that when I've gone to the supermarket in the past few weeks, yes, I've been wearing a mask. But, you know, is there any scientific basis to this, which is essentially the question that these guys are asking? You know, what's the scientific basis? And the answer is there really is none at the moment.
And I think, I mean, yes, so on this segment we are discussing obviously science and to say, yes, there's not yet scientific data sufficient enough to support the theory on either side,
yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah. Exactly.
I sort of did look into this a little bit though, because, I mean, I've been watching Taiwan. I don't know if you've been watching Taiwan. They've got more than 20 million people and they have something like, I think it's 437 cases or something very, very low.
Yeah.
And something, I guess, what you said earlier in the segment about there being lots of people around, right, the mask can act as a barrier. Now,
yes.
The lead or the panel convener for their Central Epidemic Command Center in Taiwan has said that basically one of the main reasons that they have such a low spread is because people are wearing masks, both people infected but also healthy individuals, and I guess it's what you're saying, right, in terms of it both blocking people who are infected coughing it out, and then other people who are healthy then having that barrier from taking it in.
Yes, but again, that person is making a bit of an assumption, really. They're putting it solely down to the use of masks.
They've said, like, there is no scientific data to support his theory. Like, he's acknowledged that.
Yep.
But he's saying that this has been a big factor, he believes, yes.
He believes. That's the word, you know. This is a belief. And what needs to be done is a good scientific study where you've got randomized controls and stuff like that. So you've got some people wearing masks, you know, some people not wearing masks, and you know, you're doing a real sort of scientific study. And that's all that this is saying, is that no, you can't on the basis of science say that this is, you know, that this is working.
And we should, I guess, also go to Dr. Susie Wiles, who's been doing a lot of work on this. And she says that obviously if you are going to wear a mask, you have to make sure that you are doing it right. So putting it on properly and not mucking around and playing with it, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's the whole thing, that you have to use these things properly. You know, there's no point in going out if you've got bloody great gaps between your nose and your cheeks and stuff like that, because, you know, that's really not going to help you as much as it could. But again, having said all that, I've still been wearing a mask because it just seems to me that it should be the thing to do. But on the basis of science, there's no scientific proof yet.
Okay.
There will be, but right at the moment, you can't say for sure that it's doing its business. So, yeah.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you for that elaborate explanation. Let's move on to koalas.
This is quite amazing, actually. So this was a paper published by a bunch of Australian academics at the University of Sydney. Or Sydney University, I think, as they call it. And who knew, or who didn't know, how koalas get their water? So for many years up until now, in fact, it's been thought that koalas basically get their water, or most of their water, from eucalyptus leaves. And they munch their way, this amazed me, they munch their way through 0.5 kilo of eucalyptus leaves a day.
Wow. And
they only weigh about sort of 10 kilos or something like that, your average koala. So that's quite a bunch of eucalyptus leaves. And people have thought that that's where they get all their water from, basically, or certainly most of their water. But what these researchers at the University of Sydney have now found is that they have observed koalas actually licking the water that runs down smooth tree trunks during times of rain. And remarkably, this hasn't been seen before. You'd think that, you know, we would have known pretty much all there is to know about koalas by now, just sort of through observation and stuff like that.
Do we, though?
Well, apparently not. So people had seen that koalas in captivity, for example, would drink from things like water holes and stuff like that. And it's been observed that koalas do come down trees and do start looking for water and drinking from water holes in times of severe drought. And they even, there's some wonderful clips on YouTube of koalas actually approaching people for water. There's cyclists out there with water bottles and stuff, and this koala just waddles up to them and obviously wants water. But that's not the way that they actually get their water, because this study ran, in fact, from 2006 to 2019. So this is a 13-year study.
Wow.
And part of the problem with koalas is they're basically nocturnal. And so we don't see a lot of what they actually get up to. And so, as I say, you know, this is a long-term study. They finally got around to seeing that this is what koalas actually do. And so obviously, in order to get their water like this, it has to rain, doesn't it? You know, that's really a no-brainer. But they were found doing this sort of in all sort of seasons and stuff like that. It wasn't just during the rainy season. It was during, you know, in the summer months, you know, that whenever it rained, they would be seen doing this as well. So they've finally figured out that, yeah, this is the way that koalas do get at least a significant portion of their water, which is
fascinating.
Yeah, as I say, interesting and something I would have thought they would have figured out by now.
Okay, well, let's finish this segment on a positive note of a beautiful photograph, I believe.
Oh, yes, indeed, yes. And happy birthday to the Hubble Space Telescope, which turned 30 years old last month, April the 24th, I think it was. And this is remarkable, and probably, you know, many of you listening will have seen photos from the Hubble Space Telescope without perhaps realizing that that's where these photos came from. And the Hubble Telescope is named after great American astronomer Edwin Hubble, and he was around sort of in the first half of the 20th century, and he was one of the first people to figure out that the universe was actually expanding rather than sort of being static. And so it was named after him, and it was launched in the year 1990, obviously, because this is the 30th anniversary. And rather embarrassingly for NASA, when it was launched, they started taking photos pretty much straight away with it, and all of the photos were out of focus. And they really couldn't figure out what the problem was. You know, there should have been all beautiful, sharp photos of the cosmos. Everything was out of focus and blurry, and they finally figured out that what was wrong was that one of the mirrors in the telescope, in fact, the one that focused all of the light, this had been actually ground to the wrong shape.
Oh, dear.
Okay. Now, amazingly, this wrong shape was only 2 microns away from the right shape. Okay.
Okay.
We talked about microns before. So a human hair is 50 microns. This was out by 2 microns.
Wow.
The curvature was wrong by 2 microns. And so luckily, they figured out that they could basically put a pair of glasses on the Hubble telescope and sharpen everything up, which is what they did 3 years after it went up. And ever since then, it's been taking amazing photos of the universe. And some of the things that have been discovered thanks to the Hubble Space Telescope. Okay, so when it went up, we didn't know the age of the universe. We knew it was somewhere between 10 and 20 billion years old. And now we know it's 13.8 billion years thanks to the Hubble Telescope. We didn't know that the universe was expanding at an accelerating rate. So in other words, it's getting bigger faster. And that's due to the Hubble Space Telescope. We didn't know that at the middle of galaxies we had things called supermassive black holes. And that's due to the Hubble Space Telescope. We didn't know that exoplanets existed. We seem to be discovering exoplanets now every other day. And these are planets that are orbiting other stars. We didn't know they even existed back in 1990, and now we do. And the Hubble Space Telescope has been instrumental in finding those. And it's its 30th birthday, but sadly, it's nearing the end of its operational life.
Mm.
It was last serviced in the year 2009. It used to, you know, they used to go up on the space shuttle and stuff like that and service it. Obviously, that's not around anymore. So it's dying a slow death, unfortunately. But the good news is it's going to be replaced by a thing called the James Webb Space Telescope, and that is due to go up at the end of next year. We'll see whether the coronavirus has anything to say about that timing. But and now, in fact, we've got to the stage where ground-based telescopes can do just as well as the Hubble Space Telescope. So it was a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful piece of scientific machinery. Some people are calling it sort of the greatest scientific experiment ever. And so, you know, well done, the Hubble Space Telescope. If you search online, you will see a fantastic photo of a couple of galaxies that it took for its 30th birthday. And thank you very much for the Hubble Space Telescope.
You can't see my face, Alan, but I have a big smile on my face because I know how happy this makes you. Just listing off all the achievements that this, you know, piece of machinery has accomplished.
Yeah, no, fantastic. Absolutely amazing stuff. So, yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Alan. It's always great to chat with you, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Okay, take care out there.
Mind blown. That was Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology. In a world